Real Kipper and Boren go national. We are live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. Nick Kiprios, Justin Boren, Sammy McKee. Nice jersey there, Sammy.
Oh, man. Mario.
I have a bunch of jerseys, but I brought them in last year and then I forgot to bring them back this year.
Listen, Penguin fans who may be in for a very long year appreciate bringing back some good memories for
them. I don't know that there's a better looking back of a sweater ever than that name, 66. That number, that sweater.
It's good.
I mean, that's a hockey jersey, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Woo!
Nice. Yeah. Good old DH Gate. Got it right there.
Can he come back
college.
And play?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah, it's like one of the, like, it's a, not exactly official, but 40 bucks.
I know. Penguins.
I know we touched briefly in the first hour about that World Series last night.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, the one thing that all of us felt in 1994, especially when we were up 3-1 against Vancouver, is, like, we can't blow this for no other reason because it's New York City, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I want to come back to New York City.
Yeah, it's a good city. I'd like to be allowed to be here again.
But I can't if we blow a 3-1. Yeah. We can't.
It's like, oh, you're a part of that team,
and that fifth inning, they're wearing for the rest of their lives.
I will never, ever understand why Gerrit Cole didn't just run to first base. It's pitchers fielding practice, PFP. Listen. They talk about it every spring. They do it. It's like fundamentals. Run to the base.
Just thinking about a lot of things, I guess.
Run to the base.
He pitched his heart out.
Heart out. He played. It was awesome.
But buddy, that K on Ohtani.
But he had a brain cramp there.
Like,
brain fart. Tired brain. Bad.
Nothing Rob Brown's ever experienced.
Never been.
When he was playing with Mario Lemieux. Let's welcome him in. Former NHL player. Does a great job covering the Edmonton Oilers now for Ched. Mr. Rob Brown. Brownie, how are you, pal?
I'm good. I was listening to you guys. I had brain farts when I was fully healthy and rested. So.
No,
did watch that fifth inning. That was unbelievable. And you're right. They'll wear that forever. They were that close. That game should have been in hand. And then mental mistakes. You just can't make mental mistakes against great teams. They'll make you pay.
Certainly. And maybe that's a good segue into the Edmonton Oilers and life without Connor McDavid. Now, you tell me they've got a game tonight against the Nashville Predators. The Predators, this underachieving team that many believe that could compete for a Stanley Cup after their moves, is playing them without Connor tonight a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, the Oilers right now have left their easy schedule behind. They played a lot of the lower lights in the National Hockey League non-playoff teams to start the season with a fully healthy lineup. And they struggled. They didn't come out playing as well as they should have. They're about to play a long stretch of games against the top teams in the league. Nashville right now is, I think, 3-0-1 in their last four. They're playing better hockey. This is a team that, with Connor and Leon both healthy, this is a team that the Oilers beat up on consistently and by wide margins. And Connor and Leon light it up. Nashville must be pretty excited to not have to face Connor McDavid, but I don't think the Edmonton Oilers right now can look past any team. I think they have to look in the mirror because this has been a slow start to the season for everyone in this organization, and they cannot afford to throw away any points in this next little while because they got to try and face as many games as they can without Connor and find themselves back into the playoff race.
Brownie, how does this start feel compared to last year when they were much worse in terms of wins and losses? I shouldn't say much worse, but they were worse. How does it feel similar to last year? Like at some point this should start to click?
Well, from a player standpoint, you look at the players, they seem confident. There was a time last year early in the season where they would show the faces on the bench during games, and it was just blank look after blank look.
Mm-hmm.
There was an expectation last year that they were going to go to the Stanley Cup Finals at the beginning of the season. They had the cup or bust mantra going. And when they got spanked 8-1 in the first game of the season, it was like, okay. Then they lost their second, and all of a sudden they were at a loss. I've seen this year with the players, they're still confident. Right now it's, you know what, we're just not getting the bounces. We're just not getting the breaks. Zach Hyman's a great example. Probably should have 7 goals on the season. has zero. So there's a strong confidence that this team is better than what they've shown.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a slow start, your one fear is if you have to play an extended period of time without star players. The Oilers didn't have that last year. They started poorly, but then they were healthy all season long and started playing up to their capabilities. Well, they started poorly this year, but now they got a stretch without Connor. And God forbid anything else happens injury-wise in the next few games. So I think the players still have strong belief that they are better than they are. The fan base here, I think because of what they went through last year, there's still a confidence that, okay, they're going to come through this. But I can tell you, with Connor being out, there is a little more concern in oil country right now. I get texts all the time saying, have you heard anything else? Like, is there, do you have inside information, anything like that? I don't, but I do believe that the slow start is magnified by the fact they're going to be missing their star player for a little bit here.
Outside of missing a star player, we look at this roster and it looks a lot different than the one that ended disappointing game seven. And at what point does it come off of waiting for a good bounce or a good break to, okay, Skinner, not the biggest guy in the world, Arvidsson, not the biggest guy in the world. The blue line got smaller with Travis Dermott and Stetcher. And when do you start looking at the roster and saying, we're not exactly the same as before?
Well, I agree. I don't think the Oilers today are as good as Game 7 Edmonton Oilers. They lost some key players. They lost three guys on their back end who are probably, right now, all stronger than the three they brought in. I think this next 10-game segment, the Oilers will have a good idea of where they are as a team, with or with Connor in the lineup, because they're playing good hockey clubs, teams that they're going to have to challenge for playoff spots, teams that are going to be first or second round or third round opponents in the playoffs. So I think they'll start to see what warts they have, what problems they have that may have been bad bounces, or maybe we're not as big. Maybe we're not as fast. And then you see some of the players that left the Oilers, the success they're having. I think Fogle's up to 4 goals. McLeod's up to 5. Broberg's been a stud in St. Louis. So it's the Oilers, I think, in the next 10 games will start to realize where they are as a team. The GM will look at it and say, okay, 20 games in, what do we have to do to improve our team to get back to where we want to be? And having Connor out and having to call players up, that takes away from the money that they're trying to save in cap space for a move later in the season. I always thought that a move for a defenseman, a top four defenseman, would come in February, early March. But if the Oilers struggle over the next 10 games, maybe that move has to be made earlier.
Brownie, what do you make of being the same player and the puck just not going in for you? And Hyman obviously is the best example, but the underlying numbers for this team, where it's like they're first in the NHL in ozone possession. They have the puck in the other team's end the whole game. I think they're first in some of these other categories, expected goal shot attempts, whatever it may be. They're doing pretty good. It's just not going in the net. I mean, how much can you chalk up to luck? Obviously there's some of it, and I think maybe it's a lot. Well, what do you think?
Well, I think at the beginning of it, a lot was bad luck. There was a game where Leon had a wide open net. Puck came to him. He hit the post. Like, he was literally by himself.
Yeah.
Zach Hyman's had 2 or 3 wide open nets where he's put it over the net or he shot it wide. I think early in the season, it was bad luck. I think as the season moves on, and I was a goal scorer, when they don't go in, then you start putting more pressure on yourself. And then you start, I don't know if it's panicking, but you start getting a little itchy and you shoot a little quicker. Or you pass instead of shooting because, okay, the goalie's in my way, I got to move it this way. So you start second-guessing yourself. The problem I see for the Oilers, I do believe the offense will come around. This power play is too good, with or without Connor here. The Hyman could have 7 goals this year, and they're eventually going to go in for him. Nugent Hopkins is going to be better. Leon's going to be better. The problem I see is this Oiler team, when the puck doesn't go in because of puck luck or great goaltending, they're not winning 2-1. They're not winning 3-2. They're still giving up the 4 or 5 goals against. Yeah. And that, to me, is the biggest problem here, is they're making big mistakes. And if you're not scoring, you buckle down, play better defensive hockey, and you win the game 2-1. And eventually the goals will come. But right now, I mean, they gave up 6 the other night to Columbus. And yeah, they had some bad luck, the Oilers did in that game, but Columbus still scored six goals on you.
Yes.
And it wasn't, you can't hang them all on Stuart Skinner. So they're giving up too many grade A chances. So until the puck luck turns offensively, this team has to be a better defensive team. And they were last year. They just haven't been so far this year.
You describe Broberg as a stud in St. Louis, and I'm just wondering now, is it just a foregone conclusion that if the Oilers could go back and take a mulligan like we've often have on the first tee?
No.
Would they do it, or is it to the point where let's see, if they didn't envision paying him $5 million a year, let's see what they fill the gap in between now and the trade deadline. But you just mentioned earlier, if the slow start continues, they're going to have to fill that gap in a heck of a lot sooner.
Well, it's funny. I just read a tweet that Jim Matheson, Hall of Fame sports writer, put out, and he said, more or less along the lines of, I'll paraphrase, is, are the Edmonton Oilers not going to go out and get a defenseman to play in the second pairing for about the same amount of money as Broberg?
Ugh.
And he's going to be probably the same, if not, might not be as good as Broberg, because that's what they're looking for now, is a second pairing defenseman. And for someone that's second pairing, that's probably $4 or $5 million a year. So yeah, I think they were caught off guard with the Broberg signing, with the offer sheet. They envisioned him being here. He was supposed to play with Darnell Nurse this year. He was really good for the Oilers in the playoffs. And I think everything that happened after that offer sheet was kind of trying to stem the bleeding. Like, how can we stop the bleeding and somehow get this thing going in the right direction? So yeah, I think they would love the opportunity to rethink that. 4.5 is a lot of money for him, but if he turns out to be what St. Louis thinks he is, I think the Oilers would be really happy paying a guy in the second pairing right now 4.5, knowing that he's 25 years old or whatever he is, and he's got another 7-8 years in the organization.
How have the new guys been for the team this year, specifically Jeff Skinner and Arvidsson up front, who I thought were both, well, I shouldn't say I didn't love the Skinner one. I liked Arvidsson quite a bit, but it's not quite going in for him yet either, is it?
Well, it isn't. Arvidsson's got 3 points on the season. They all came in one game.
Yeah.
I love his work ethic. I really do. And the last two playoffs, when he was with LA, he was LA's best player against the Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
He plays like he's 6'4" when he's probably 5'8". But offensively, it hasn't been there for him. Skinner's been good. He's contributed. He probably deserves a couple more goals.
Mm-hmm.
He has been good. He had a really off preseason that people were really worried, but he's been probably been the most consistent of all the forwards for the Oilers. It's on the back end where it's been a struggle. Dermott and Stetcher have been flip-flopping in and out of the lineup. Emberson, who they wanted to be in the top four, he's now as the number six defenseman. He's been in and out of the lineup. So it's one of those things right now. They're not scoring goals. They're not defending goals. Their power play is not very good. The penalty killing's awful. They're not getting the big save when they want it. Every coach's challenge goes against them. There's been no puck luck for it. This is like their team Schleprock right now. They got the rainy cloud over top of them all day long. So eventually it's got to turn. And maybe the injury to McDavid will do it. Leon Draisaitl has won a Hart Trophy.
Yes.
In the National Hockey League. And it was the year that Connor McDavid got hurt. And Leon put the team on his back. They need Leon to do that again over the next little stretch.
Speaking of a Hart Trophy, how many games does Connor need to miss before you say he's out of the running for a Hart or an Art Ross Trophy? 50? 60?
Well, yeah, if he's got 60 games left, he's capable of two points a game. So there's 120 right there, and he's already got 10. So that's 130 points. So he can afford 10 games, and I still think he's got a good chance of winning the scoring title. He's that good. And the thing with Connor McDavid, he gets better as the year moves on.
Mm-hmm.
He always struggles early in the season, and struggle means point to a point and a half a game. As the season goes on, he gets better, and he'll be rested. And I think that's scary for the rest of the National Hockey League. If Connor McDavid gets a little bit of a rest at the beginning of the year, you can never count him out. He's the best in the world for a reason.
Yeah. How do you like the rest of the Pacific Division? I think going into the season, people thought Calgary not going to be great, and maybe they won't be, but they had a good start. Vegas probably better than most expect. What are your thoughts so far?
I think Vegas is good.
Yep.
Vegas will always be good. I've got a newfound respect for Jack Eichel over the last couple of years in Vegas. the way he plays. He's both ends. He's good. Mark Stone, fantastic. So I think Vegas and Edmonton will fight for the division during the regular season. I think Vancouver without Demko, that's a big loss. He's their MVP. And with Pedersen being pedestrian, I mean, that's a lot of money tied up in a guy that's supposed to be your number one center who right now is struggling to keep up as a third line. So I think it's a two-team race for the division. Mm-hmm. I think Vancouver will be your third-place team. The one team that surprised me is the LA Kings. I didn't pick them to make the playoffs. And they've started better than I thought they would. I thought there would be three teams from the Pacific in, and I thought five teams would come from the Avalanche Conference or the Avalanche Division. So I think the Pacific Division is probably the weakest mm-hmm. of the four divisions in the National Hockey League, which is good if you're an Edmonton Oilers fan.
Calgary took a bit of a hit the last few games, but you know, even the fact that they got off to such a good start must have surprised you a little bit.
It was. Their work ethic is fantastic. They've played the Oilers, they beat the Oilers, and they were good. Anderson's having a fantastic year. I like Uyghur on the back end. Huberto started well. They got a bunch of young kids that play with some grit. They were physical, very physical against the Oilers' best players in that game. I mean, I know that Edmonton Oilers fans can't stand the Calgary Flames, but to me, the Battle of Alberta is better if both Calgary and Edmonton are playoff teams. The games mean more. So I hope Calgary hangs around and plays meaningful games as this season moves on, because then it just every time Edmonton and Calgary plays each other, it's that much more important and there's that much more intensity.
Brownie, we were talking on the first half of the show with Jason Bukala about like scouting and players getting drafted and then developing into what they're going to become and kind of when you know, when you've seen what they're going to become in the league. Timothy Liljegren was the topic, you know, for a reason. He's just got traded out of Toronto. I was looking at your stats while we're sitting here. I mean, the one year in junior, you had 212 points, 76 goals, 212 points in one season, 60-some games, guys. The year before, you had 100. Anyway, so you made it to the NHL. You had a 50-goal season. How long did it take you? I died for 1 minute. I'm back. How long did it take you to feel like you were the player you're going to be in the NHL?
Well, if anyone's ever seen me skate or play defensive, they'll know that I was only going to be an offensive player in the National Hockey League. I was put in a position for success in Pittsburgh when I got there. I had big numbers in junior, and my first game I got to play with Mario. There was an injury. I missed the first three or four games of the season. Bob Airey got hurt, and I played on a line with Mario. First game, two shots, two goals. So I was more or less set as an offensive player. Having said that, my skating eventually did not improve. I went to the minors and had to come back as a different player. I came back as a third line player and played three more years. So I had to reinvent myself. I think sometimes situation dictates it. I know that both Ray Ferraro and Dean Evason both went to Hartford. They're both great offensive players. Dean Evason turned himself into a checking line forward and a penalty killer because he realized that in that situation, he wasn't going to be able to be a top six forward. Mm-hmm. So you got to realize what your situation is on the team you're with, and then you got to accept your role. And a lot of players don't want to do that, and they'll fight it. And if they fight it, they find themselves out of the league and they find themselves in Europe. So realize who you are, and having an honest conversation with yourself will probably allow you to fulfill a dream of playing in the National Hockey League. Fighting it will probably have a long European career instead.
Well said.
Speaking of scoring goals and having pressure to score goals, you mentioned Zach Hyman earlier this year. We've heard from two star players, highly paid players in Zibanejad in New York, and recently today or the other day, Willie Nylander here in Toronto saying, I need more ice time. I want more ice time. I want to stay more active. And how did you go about it when you felt like you weren't getting the minutes that helped you support you to score goals, or one of your teammates? How would you have handled it back in your day when you felt like, hey, you want me to score goals? Put me out there more.
Well, it's true. Scoring is hard in the National Hockey League. And if you're not on the first power play unit, and if you're not playing with, you know, one of the top players, you're not going to be a 30-goal scorer, a 40-goal scorer. you watch a lot of video. You try to talk to the assistant coaches. Usually go to the assistant coaches first because they're the sounding board, and they'll go to the head coach for you. But you, Kipper, when you and I played, we didn't get to complain. We didn't get to tell the talk to the press or the coach. More or less, yes sir, no sir. Because if we would have said something and spoke up, we probably would have found ourselves in the minors. But it is tough. And
different today. But it is different today, right, Brownie? I mean, the players 100%. Feel they feel freer to go and express themselves, even if it is through the media.
Oh, 100% it is. And, well, I mean, first of all, when we played, I know in Pittsburgh, we had one beat reporter. So I'm going to go talk to Dave and say, hey, Dave, they're not playing me. Play me more. Whereas nowadays, there's all of the social media, all the podcasts, all the... So there's way more media. So there's a lot more pressure on a player. And more so if you're in Toronto, in Edmonton. In Pittsburgh, I could go 12 games without a goal. No one would know because I'd be behind high school football on the weekend in the sports thing. So it is tough, and you were quiet. But nowadays, they come out and talk about it, and a lot of it is money. What are you going to do? A guy's making, you're paying a guy $10, $11 million. You're not getting rid of him. You can't. And he'll come out and say. And the pressure is way different now than when we played, I believe.
Last one from me. We had Steve Ellicott on earlier in the week, and we were talking about goalie save percentage. Way down this year. It's like 897. I actually think it's 898 today. But the league average last year was 903. League average 7 years ago, was like 915. What's your personal theory? Why are shooters starting to win back some ground in the battle with goaltenders?
The skill set is way higher. Yeah. Way higher nowadays than when I played. I'm on the ice every day here in Edmonton with Sports Academy kids.
Oh, cool.
And these kids, they shoot better than I did. And they're in grade 4, grade 5. I had years ago, I worked with an academy, and we had Dylan Gunther in it. And I was out there doing skills with them. And they said, okay, you're going to take these forwards down there, work with them on quick releases, quick shots. So I went down there and I said, okay, you guys have a competition. You'll have 5 shots. And then the winner, I'll take the winner in the final. Dylan Gunther won. Then he goes 5 shots in the final. He scores 5 straight. And I just put my stick down. All right, there's nothing I can do with this kid.
He's finished. The cake is baked.
He's U15, this kid. I was just indoors. We're doing indoor stuff shooting. And these kids can all go bar down. They can pick spots. All the stuff that when I played, Mario or Gretzky would try to score from behind the net where he tried to bounce it off a goalie and in. They're all doing it now. There's that little teeny spot where a goaltender kind of leans. They're all going short side top shelf now. In my era, there was 2 guys on a team that could do it. Now you got 4th line guys that are capable of it. And Kipper, you know, when we played, the 4th line guys usually weren't as skilled as they are
nowadays. Usually. There were exceptions.
I don't think today there's anybody going back to the bench and someone saying to them, that's a stupid shot. You know?
Right.
True.
Oh, yeah.
And that's all we had. It's like, you're never going to score from there. And now it's like, they all think they're going to score from anywhere.
Yeah.
And it is true. And they can. And they're picking, they're standing in the corner. Well, last year in the playoffs, Zadorov scored on Skinner from the boards corner. And he was number 5 defenseman. And he ripped it top shelf.
But why wasn't the reverse VH invented when we played? Just give us a chance to, go top shelf. It wasn't there.
Well, we weren't allowed to take top shelf shots in practice either. I had Tommy Barrasso was my goalie. If you didn't hit him in the pads, he was yelling at you. So we weren't allowed to
waist down.
The audacity to go high. Could hurt someone.
Well, listen, we'll see what happens starting tonight for the Edmonton Oilers with the Nashville Predators. But the world without Connor McDavid starts tonight. Hey, Brownie, thanks for doing this, pal.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Brownie. Dylan Gunther story. I was a skating coach at the Okanagan Hockey School, and in my group was Shea Weber. He was 14. I would have been 18 or something.
Did he bomb it?
We literally should have switched spots. I should have gone in the drills, and he should have been the instructor. It was so evident he was the best athlete out there.
And hammering the puck.
Yeah, oh my God. And, you know, he skated, and he was just huge.
And he'll be inducted in the Hall of Fame next week.
Yeah.
You shot one through the net in the Olympics.
Yeah, my God, yeah. So Elliot Friedman has an article today that talks about his billet family, who family friends of mine from Kelowna. He billeted with Barry and Ingrid, and they also had Mikael Backlund, 1,000 NHL games, Luke Shen, 1,000 NHL games, Tyler Myers, 1,000 NHL games, Shea Weber, obviously Hockey Hall of Fame. They were like the billets. You're like,
they're good cooks. Man.
Ingy does a good job.
I'm just looking at that 88-89 roster because you did what I love bringing up junior stats. Thanks, Barney.
212 points.
But so Rob had 115 points. That's the year that Mary Lemieux had maybe the greatest statistical season in NHL history with 199 points in 76 games, 85 goals. Like, you know, that's
what is obscene. That?
But Paul Coffey.
That's in the NHL, by the way.
Paul Coffey on that team had 113 points in 75 games, and he was a minus 10. There were so many goals happening. Oh, my God.
Like, for goals worth two?
Action.
That's wild.
I played against Rob Brown. Like, we all wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
Just kill him. Just he was cocky.
Yeah.
Like, because he was.
Oh, and he'd run his mouth, right?
Really good goal scorer. Yeah. He could put points up.
Yeah.
And when you were head and shoulders above everyone else there and did a couple of windmills in front of your bench.
If you follow our friend Sean McIndoe, Down Goes Brown. His name is Down Goes Brown because
of Rob Brown.
When Rob Brown lost a fight to I forget who. Somewhere in Toronto, I presume at Center Ice, but Brownie tells that story pretty well. He was on Chicklets this week, too, Rob Brown.
Spectacular guy.
Yeah, he does a great job.
Game time?
Yeah, we're glad he joins us.
Yeah.
Game time. It's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the
odds. No more baseball.
Find out why it's ever ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So, like you said, no more baseball for me to talk about in this segment, but I did have to go to the NFL because I looked at who's playing tonight.
J-E-T-S.
And it is Justin Bourne's pathetic New York Jets that are playing on Thursday Night Football tonight. And they are minus 130 favorites against the Houston Texans. I guess Vegas thinks that they need it. Houston's banged up. They got some injuries on offense. I got to tell you, if you bet the New York Jets as a minus 130 favorite, you are a sicko. Give me the Houston Texans as an underdog, plus 110.
But hold on. This is like when the Ottawa Senators get hot in the final month and a half of the season.
Maybe.
You know, and like get a worse pick for it. That's what the Jets are about.
That's when any team gets hot.
Right. Already eliminated.
Speaking of insane favorites, the 3-7-1 Pittsburgh Penguins are minus 190 favorites tonight on home ice against the Anaheim Ducks. Sure, the Ducks stink, but I'm telling you something else, boys. So do the Penguins. They stink. You know, that's two stinky teams playing in a toilet bowl. Give me the Anaheim Ducks as a plus 160 underdog tonight in Pittsburgh. And the last one I have, hey, you said no when the Columbus Blue Jackets beat your beloved Islanders. And the last one I have for you tonight, Jared McCann, goal against the Leafs tonight, plus 220.
That Look it.
Is definitely happening. The man that Kyle Dubas let go for Justin Hall. And that was Game Time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. He'd look good in the middle six.
Sure would.
He's a 25-30 goal scorer.
At least, right? He's right? Big, fast.
They signed him to a $5 million contract a little while ago. And he's
scored 29 last year. 40 the year before.
40.
He had a crazy shooting percentage year that year, I remember. But even last year, he almost scored 30. This year, he's got 14 points in 10 games. Yeah, he probably a little better than Justin Hall.
Kerfoot they kept.
No, it was Kerfoot.
I thought it was Hall that they protected. They protected Kerfoot.
They kept both of them, so yes. One of them could have been. But there was something on the math there with, like, you know, 5-4.
Yeah, it was bad math. I forget. That's what it was.
Yeah, it didn't math out, did it?
They are better, Seattle, are they not?
They're better. I like Montour as an ad for them. I like Chandler Stephenson as an ad.
And he's not playing tonight.
I do love Chandler Stephenson. Way too much money, but I do love him as a hockey player.
I'm
way too many years.
Not sure that they needed to climb that high to pay him.
Yeah, what was it?
5.25?
I think it was more than that.
Maybe six.
Six.
Tell us.
I'm Googling it. What is it? What's the new website called?
Cap wages. So. He makes 6.25 per year.
Oof. Boys, that's not right.
For how long?
I like him.
Five.
Great agent.
But he's not.
Jeez.
He's
7
not.
Years. Times great 6.25. Agent. How old is he? He's got to be old. He's already 30.
Yeah. And he's not he's great. He's a great skater, but he's not the hardest working guy.
Is that right?
I will say, like, watching when I went to that Vegas game when I was down there last year, him live was the only time I've ever seen him live. His skating was mind-blowing live.
Yeah.
Like, he flies, effortless stride, really gets around the ice well.
The guy they love and could easily be the captain of that team, you know, Eberle's the captain, yeah. but is Brandon Montour.
Yeah.
They've loved him.
He's a hat trick.
He's the man.
From day one.
Cool dude.
And that guy, they say, in the gym, in practice, never takes a day off.
Yeah.
And that's where, that's value.
Yeah, that is, absolutely. They have Shane Wright playing as the third line center this year, which is interesting. In Seattle there. Like, he's kind of found his way a little thing, bit. These guys are taking time. Like, Lafreniere took years, and all of a sudden it's damn, this guy's a player.
And Byfield, same difference. If this guy keeps getting stronger and gains a little bit more confidence, then he could have a breakout year coming out. I don't know if he'll ever be a flashy or score like Lafreniere.
Right.
But he could be a really important piece still for
Tanev
Seattle.
Versus Tanev tonight.
Boy. Oh, the Tanev bros.
Yeah.
He was, but the thing with Wright, like, he was supposed to go number one, right? With Slav, and then Slavkovsky goes, and then was it two or three other, was he fifth or fourth overall? I can't remember.
Feels like fourth.
But he was mugged. Wasn't he staring at the table?
Which I liked at the time.
I loved it.
But
loved
it. And panned out since.
Yes.
Anyway.
Okay. Did you wrap up game time for us?
I did already, buddy.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into some news and notes. Seven games on tap. We'll go through a few of them and get you ready for a big night in the National Hockey League. That and more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. It was a pretty ugly loss for the Vancouver Canucks against the New Jersey Devils. But, I mean, the big picture is, it's like, they're okay in the standings. It's not like they're Boston right now scraping the bottom of the barrel in their division. So, how concerned are you about, let's start with Pettersson.
I'm just watching the wrist shot that's been all over the internet last night. You know, just a really passive effort. I don't know. You know, I see people in Vancouver's market tweeting things like, can you just let him play? Or like, you know, maybe he's hurt. Or I think fans have every right to, you know, not like the way he's playing compared to how they know he can play. That pressure is a natural result of they've loved him, they've paid him, they've committed to him, and he's not playing well. I don't know. Like, I don't think there's some big magical thing that's going to change. He's got to figure it out, and confidence comes in waves.
Nick Kipper, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Sammy, a lot of people are speculating, and, you know, our own Elliot Friedman, I think, wrote about this or talked about it on his 32 Thoughts, that he's too sensitive, or he's basically, you know, is maybe bothered by that marketplace. Shouldn't have this all been like kind of put to bed?
Have you,
when you signed your big contract,
have you ever heard anyone suggest anything like that he was like pressured into signing a contract, or like that maybe he didn't want to but he had to take the money, and the, you know, when that comes up, it's like you can figure it out after you get the money.
I don't know if that's the case here, but there must have been some athlete in some environment that said, yeah, I don't love it here, but if they're going to throw me that type of money, man, I'm taking it and running with it.
Yeah, and if I don't like it, we can figure it out after that.
Like, I got to be honest with you, man. I thought it was touch and go before they announced his big contract.
I didn't think he was going
to. I thought he could leave.
Mm-hmm.
That the feeling was that, maybe he needs just a quieter environment for him. And Vancouver ain't it. Toronto ain't it. Montreal ain't it. Edmonton ain't it.
I would love to know what the numbers are literally since the day he signed the contract forward. Because he hasn't had nearly the same sting in his game.
I can't speak to the last few games, but the last I looked into it, which is about a week ago for a Hockey Central show, he had played 39 games and had one goal. One even strength goal, sorry. So I don't know what the actual numbers are. I just remember that standing out.
He's four points this year through 9 games. He's a -3. I've watched a couple of their games. It's just not.
And he can shoot the pill.
Oh, he can fire it. He can even one-time it, too.
The one-timers, but like the zip like that Kyle he Connor, used to have on his shot is no longer there. Rick Tocchet had talked about maybe opponents knowing this, taking away his ability to one-time a puck and
but hey,
time to get his feet moving more.
To me, do you see any stylistic comparison to Kyle Connor? I see Pettersson as a guy who can be more physical than Connor, but the same sort of like creative dashing. Maybe Connor's more of a pure goal type guy than Pettersson. Pettersson's a little bit more of a disher too, or a little bit more well-rounded, I should say. But I'm watching Kyle Connor right now. He has 9 goals in 10 games. People know he can score.
He's firing it in.
People know he can score. Yeah. They're taking it away too.
Oh, man, he can zip.
Last night, he flew by the Detroit D and caught a pass at a spot where someone without confidence just shoots it and he catches it, takes it to his backhand across the net. Like, it's confidence for me. And one guy has it, one guy doesn't.
I wonder who you put on the line with him and Matthews. The pass to those two guys can be a pretty dangerous line. USA.
Is that gonna, I mean, you think they'll play together?
Montembeau will be fine.
Montembeau's going to be fine. Binnington's okay. Hofer's going to be fine.
Anyways, but if I'm a Vancouver fan, and I'm sure there's Vancouver fans listening to this right now on Sportsnet 650, I would be panicking about him.
What are you going to panic
for? Because I'm a fan, and that's what fans do. You've signed this guy to a massive contract, boys. Like, it's
are you,
huge.
Are you saying you're panicking that he would leave, concern, that he'd won out?
No, that, like, he's just
the bigger
not the same guy since he signed the contract.
The bigger concern is it's bled from the end of last season.
Yes.
Into this season.
Exactly. You'd think it's a summer off, you refresh, you're back, you know, you got a good team, you're ready to go, and he just looks exactly the same as he looked in the playoffs. Like, exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know, man. I'd be concerned, big time, if I'm a, fan.
I think concern is legit for him right now.
For sure.
Anyways. All right, your buddy Freddie Anderson in Carolina hurt again?
Yeah, he's hurt again.
What's his problem? Lower body?
Yeah, lower body. Week to week.
So, Kip.
Week to week.
Week to week. Is he on the ice?
Week to week is like, could mean 4 to 6.
Yeah.
We're
all week to week.
You wrote an article yesterday in which you mentioned something about the franchise valuations. Just a passing comment about the Leafs being worth $3.66 billion now, the most valuable franchise in the NHL, up $1 billion year over year, which doesn't make sense. It's like when houses go up. It's like, what are your thoughts on every franchise in the NHL now being worth $1 billion, which has never happened in the history of the league before?
Yeah. Well, great for owners.
Yeah. Gary's done his job.
Sucks for the players because they don't get to participate in any of that.
No. Nope.
Right?
I'll
tell you what.
You'll never, ever not be a player.
Thank you.
I love it.
Yes.
Like, that's just the first thing that comes to your mind.
Sucks.
Yeah. Give me that cut.
And the reason why those numbers are going so far up this quickly is because of, you know, the deal you cut yourselves way back when, but that's for another story, another day.
I want to talk about a couple of the teams, the biggest risers and fallers in franchise valuations. The Chicago Blackhawks fell to. They're now behind the Los Angeles Kings, who are the fifth most valuable franchise. That surprise you at all?
No, not really, because it wasn't too,
LA's LA.
It wasn't too long ago, pre-Jonathan Toews, pre-Pat Kane, pre-Stanley Cups, modern-day Stanley Cups, that they were having trouble filling the building.
Mm-hmm.
So that market's clear. You give me stars, you give me cups, and we'll bring that value right back up.
The biggest jump in franchise valuation by percentage was Boston, which is 50%. But then right behind them at 49 was the New York Islanders, the Dallas Stars, and the New Jersey Devils. Islanders' new building is a big one, right? That's probably part of their franchise valuation. Boston, 50% more valuable this year than last year.
I think you can definitely look at new buildings and where the revenue is coming from and stuff like that. But when the dust settles, it's just really a bunch of rich billionaires going,
it's worth this now.
I want to get into this club.
Yeah.
I want to get in the club. Like, we have clubs losing money. So you tell me how anything can be worth $1 billion if you're losing money. But that's not
Uber and
that's not what it's all about. Yeah. What it's all about is strictly what one person's willing to pay
right.
to get into this club. And now they're attracting, there's never been more billionaires in this world, and they continue to like come on strong. And then they get bored and they're like, I want one of those shiny things. What? And there's only 32 of them.
What's the Utah?
What Utah, I was just going to say, Utah is up 4 from dead last to 28th. They're 78% more valuable this year than last.
Yeah, that tracks.
That tracks. They're $1.14 billion. And the more concerning one is the Jets fell 3 spots. Still 19% more valuable than they were last year, though. So, you know, but if you're betting, you're going, that's a win. But.
If Winnipeg is going to sell their team for over $1 billion, it's going to be because someone's going to move them. It's not because they're going to sell it for $1 billion and keep them there.
It's the value of the franchise, right? That's what franchise
watch,
is worth.
Watch their attendance down 25-30% and, and non-sellouts.
So what's the Leafs?
The Leafs being up 38% at $3.66 billion ahead of the Rangers, who are at $3.25 billion.
Can you imagine what that number would have been if the Leafs actually got past
had
one round
ever
in 10 years?
Well, they, I see, past.
Right?
So like, top five is Leafs,
Toronto, Rangers, Montreal Habs. Canadiens, Boston Bruins, Los Angeles Kings, now ahead of Chicago and Edmonton, who sit at 6 and 7. Like,
so
Edmonton at 2.4.
The real money has to be made in postseason where you don't pay the players. That's where, like the Edmonton Oilers, I don't know what that number was.
How much money they made in the playoffs last year?
Yeah.
Listen, I golfed with a few boys out in Lacombe, Alberta, and I know personally in that clubhouse they gave $1 billion each.
So, yeah, right. Right. They were dying money
in Canada. Like one game could attract $20-30 million to a team.
Right.
One game.
And they had
in a Stanley Cup final.
How many home games did they had last year?
Many.
13, 14, right? Something like that.
Average price of a ticket could be $1,500 now. It's like you going to see the Beatles?
So I would pay $1,500 to see all of the Beatles live.
Yes.
Yeah, I might consider it. So you look at all these valuations and you know, all these teams that are the most worth the most are the most popular, mm-hmm. right? So the most fans. I just don't understand. I'll never understand the hard cap. There's no other.
Kim can tell you all about it.
I know, but there's no other league that like, don't you want your best teams to be able to spend and be able to be the most, like, you know, the most popular teams to be the best and have the most money?
You think it would be good for the league?
Yeah.
Where the most interest is, you'd want them to be more successful, like Yankees, Dodgers.
The Rangers should be able to spend $140 million on the roster. The Leafs should be able to spend $200 million on the roster. Like, I've never understood where it's like, they all have to be the same level of mid, and you can't pay guys, and you can't keep them in the same place. It's like, don't you want your most popular franchises to be the most successful? I've never understood it. It's like, salary cap and you got the luxury tax, the NBA, competitive something tax in the MLB. NFL's a weird thing with the cap. Like, I just don't get it. I just don't understand. I'll never understand it. And Kipper could be like, oh, wow,
no,
this.
It's, no, it's Bettman trying to protect the franchise valuations of these lower teams. And
I don't know. It's
give them a chance.
Hard to argue.
Can I have an idea.
When you think that you could sell like your worst franchise ever for over $1 billion right now.
And
right.
Can I say that?
Something's worked for them.
You go the luxury tax and you have to pay into the luxury tax. So would the Leafs, would MLSE pay into a luxury tax that be able to spend $120 million
in the past? There has been taxes
in the cap era.
MLSE, yes, in the cap era, they've stroked checks that ended up with Nashville, mm-hmm. right? The lesser teams.
Oh, like you mean like
it's revenue sharing?
Revenue sharing.
Oh, yeah. I know, but I'm talking about being able to spend more on the Leafs, or maybe
no, that's capped. That's never going
to
happen.
He wants to pay the league $10 million to spend an additional $10 million.
But who does that hurt?
Yeah.
I guess just the small market teams with no money, which should be punished for not being trying to be as competitive.
Like move them to somewhere where it's popular.
But not only that, if they're all...
You're not wrong.
I know I'm not wrong. It drives me crazy.
And if they're all billionaires right now, what do they care?
You're right. The salary cap right now is a joke.
If they're willing to spend $1.5 billion on the Ottawa Senators or the Anaheim Ducks, then... Make them spend too.
What's Giannis make for Milwaukee? $60 million a year or something? He almost makes the whole team's cap.
Like what's his name? The guy from the Sixers that never plays, Joel Embiid, just signed literally a $300 million contract.
And he plays 4 years.
Yeah, and he plays
a 4 year contract.
He plays twice a year. Like, it's I don't know. I think the luxury tax, and I'm saying as a fan of a popular team, but that's.
They tried. The players tried everything, but this is the way the owners wanted it. They're not going back.
Start their own league. Road league.
Right.
Live hockey.
Where's Versteeg? Clever NHL, pal. Launch it.
But it's just, you're not serving your fans. Anyways, we don't need to keep going. It's been a hobby horse of mine forever. But, you know, the Leafs got paid $1 billion to have a bank put their name on the team. They can only spend 80 on the team.
All right, you're done.
Okay, I'm done.
Nichushkin has likely to join practice before he's actually cleared for reinstatement to play games.
I'm nervous.
Yeah.
About a guy that's failed a couple of times to, you know, stay on this straight and narrow.
But I mean.
And you know more about this.
Yeah.
And
I do. I get defensive about this. It's, you know, what's the guy's going to try? He's going to come back and play and try to be around.
Yeah.
If you're Colorado and you.
Some guys need, I would imagine, some guys can do it after 4 weeks, and some guys.
Yeah.
Need a year, and some guys never can.
Yeah.
So what do you do? Just throw them back in the fire?
Well, that's what I'm asking you. You just want to tell them to get a job?
No, I'm not the expert. Yeah. I'm just saying that, like, he's failed once when you've brought him back.
Yes.
And this isn't going to work 9 to 5. This is professional sports where it's a different beast.
I mean, there's doctors and lawyers dealing with it too, right? It's all high risk, and it's important for their companies that these people be able to do it.
Just, I hope they put him in a position to succeed. That's my only point. And after that, I'm not an expert.
But and I hear you. And that's totally fair. It is, obviously, I'm a guy rooting for him.
Yeah, we're all rooting for him.
Sort it out. And if you're Colorado, it's like there are a few players on earth like Nichushkin. You know, he is a big monster. He's their leading goal scorer in playoffs before falling off the rails. So, I don't blame them for saying, God, he doesn't make a ton of money compared to his value. Let's see what he can do.
They need him bad.
And you have to think.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, too, is like they need him bad.
Oh, yeah. This is they need this to work.
It's a professional, it's a professional sports franchise. You have to think that they're going to do everything in their power.
Right.
To put the people, the right people in charge, talking to him and sticking with them and giving him the support he needs. It's a major league operation. You'd think they'd treat him as such,
I would be curious to know what they put in place. Maybe we should talk to someone from Colorado and just be like, what does this support look like for a guy like that? Like, I don't know.
I also mentioned in my article today that I wrote for the Toronto Star that there's going to be some pressure now on the Boston Bruins to get going here between now and.
How are we talking about
American,
this? 5:52. Yes.
American Thanksgiving.
You mentioned
it is unacceptable right now. Their start, especially with their commitments in free agency, and to Swayman that
Zadorov, Lindholm, Swayman all got
looking at the standings, and you're tied for the basement in the Atlantic Division. So
the conversation we're not having that we're beating around is about Montgomery.
Yeah,
he's got to
turn this thing around.
And you just wrote the word Quenneville, not about he could take that job, that he's a name who's out there.
He's a name that's out there. And we saw Stan Bowman end up in Edmonton, and he's free and clear now. And if there's struggling teams going into Thanksgiving, that name is going to pop up.
Mm-hmm. Red Wings, too?
That's outside.
Yeah, good one.
That's out of saying that the Boston Bruins are considering him right now. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, probably be the first name that kind of comes up.
Having that name out there adds a lot of pressure.
You mentioned Detroit. I like Colorado. Tons of pressure on Colorado, team we just spoke of moments ago.
Yeah.
And Bednar's been great, but
tough one. Billionaire
owners want to keep it going.
Me too. I want to be a billionaire owner as well.
Yeah,
we'll get you there on this show.
You can only spend $10 on your team though in the NHL.
7 games on tap, including a pretty important one, a statement game for the Edmonton Oilers tonight. Enjoy your games tonight, and we're back tomorrow on Off the Rails Friday with Doug McClain.
See you tomorrow.
From Florida. Have a great night, everybody.